Well, to get a gun license in South Africa, you need to firstly go to the police station and fill out an application form, and that starts a 1 to 2 year process to get a firearm. You're allowed one firearm per person at most. You have to have an interview with a police officer. They then interview your spouse, and they have an interview for two acquaintances of you. They also run a background report of yourself, you know, for a check. They do a house inspection where they come to your house and they make sure that you have a gun safe that is fastened to two surfaces, and they look around and make sure that everything is safe there as well. You have to go on a safety course, a 3-day safety course. You also have to take a competency test where you have to shoot at a target and show that you have a good grouping. I don't know how you're supposed to do that if you're not allowed a gun and not allowed to use one until you get the license. But anyway, you're supposed to be good enough to own a gun before you get one. After you've done all of that, you also have to write a several-page justification for why you require one. For example, how far you are from the police station, what the crime stats are in your neighborhood, the fact that you use cash for your business and can get robbed, etc., etc. You have to have this justification. That then gets sent to the Capitol, where it gets judged by a panel. The waiting list for that is several months, like 18 months sometimes it can take before they get to that. And then they will decide whether or not to say yes or no. If they say yes, you can buy the particular firearm that you have applied for and no other firearm, which you've paid for already but could not take home. And if they say no, you lose the money for the firearm that you paid for, and you can't have one. And if they say yes, you get one. And you have to do this process every 5 years. But anyone can get a kid. You can just decide to have one. You can have as many as you want. You can have no training courses. You can prove no competency, have no background check. Anyone can have a child. Now, let me ask you, which is more dangerous, to own a firearm or to have a kid? Well, turn your Bibles to Ephesians chapter 6. We're going to have a crash course in how to raise children. If you have already raised your children, too late. If you are about to raise children, then maybe this will make you change your mind. And if you're in the middle of raising children, well, we're all in it together, so don't feel too bad. Remember that we have looked at, in chapter 5 of Ephesians, the being under the influence of the Holy Spirit. As we're under the influence of the Holy Spirit, part of that influence is seen in submission. Wives submitting to their husbands, men and women submitting to one another in the family and in the church, and all those different relationships. And we're still kind of in that flow, and now we're heading into children. So the week before last, we looked at wives' responsibility. Last week, we looked at husbands' responsibility. This week, we're looking at children's role in the family and really their responsibility and our responsibility to them. And you will discover that, you know, there really should be a course that you take before you have kids. You should really write an exam. You should really prove some competency. Otherwise, things can go haywire. Let me just read for you Ephesians chapter 6, verse 1 to 4. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, quote from Exodus. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. We're going to look at four aspects of God's design for parenting in the family tonight. Four aspects of God's design. The definition of obedience, the goal of obedience, which is to bring them up, the discipline of obedience, how to spank them, and then the instruction of obedience, to train them up. Now, if you have been in the home team class over the last several weeks, we've been going through the book, The Home Team, chapter by chapter, and there's a whole section in parenting, and some of this is going to overlap with some of what you heard there, because they were produced by the same person. But we're going to look at the first point, definition of obedience. If you were not in the class and this seems very overwhelming, you can always get the book and tackle it yourself. Definition of obedience. Well, verse 1 starts off, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. So to obey is to do what someone tells you to do, And here it adds this component of honoring your father and mother, speaking about the attitude that goes along with that. And the result is that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. In other words, that there's benefit. This obedience leads to benefit. It leads to not bad consequences, but good results. So children, in this family context, refers to, in this verse here, refers to dependents, not descendants. So this is referring to anyone who's in your household, who's under the authority of the parents, specifically the fathers here are addressed. Remember, the father, as the head of the home, is the one that's held responsible. He is the one that is held accountable for what he's doing primarily, and so that's why he's addressed. But this imperative is actually aimed at whom? What's the first word? Children. So this is a verse to children. And everything else kind of flows around that. Children, obey your parents. There it is. That's the imperative. Now, if you are living at home and you don't consider yourself a child, but your parents pay your rent and your mom cooks your food and does your laundry for you, then you are a child. Well, because you're behaving like one. And you are in the purview of your parents' authority, and therefore you must respect their authority. You must honor them because you're in their home. You know how dads often say, while you live under my roof, you'll live by my rules. Absolutely. I believe that's biblical. If you don't like your dad's rules, good. Go get a job. Go get an apartment and live by your own rules. But while you are living under someone else's roof, if they are providing for you, then they do have authority over you. That's just how that works. Parents, before you get smug about that, one day in your old age, you may move back in with your children and become their dependents. And then they are going to use that exact phrase on you. While you live under my roof, you will drink your prune juice when I put it in front of you, or whatever it is. And sure enough, if you're not paying them rent, then they get to tell you when to have your prune juice. Okay, well, Genesis 2:18 tells us that a man shall leave his mother and father and cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. We focus often on the one flesh union of that, but remember, it starts off with leave. You need to leave your mother and father and start a new unit. Once you have a new unit, then as a father, as a husband, you are then in charge of, responsible for, and accountable for that unit. But until then, you belong to the unit above you. Okay, so let's move on to this idea of children. We understand who the children are. They're the ones in the home, even if they're teenagers, even if they're grown. And your job is to train them up so that they can leave and cleave, so that they can be pushed out of the nest and flap their own wings and fly. Your job is not to keep them in and shelter them to the point that they can't function on their own. Now, what we learned in the home team class, I'll just reiterate here, the most rookie mistake that most parents make, it's very natural to do this, but it's a mistake. They start off lenient with their children and just let their children do whatever they want, as much as they want. And then when they realize that's not going well, the kids have learned how to do temper tantrums and they're stealing and they're being, you know, reprimanded at school and they're getting into trouble, or you give them a cell phone because you're lenient, you want to be the cool parent, your kid has a cell phone, and then they start sending pictures that they shouldn't send, or they start cyberbullying and they get the phone confiscated at school, and then the parents are in a panic, and then guess what they do? They narrow the field of responsibility. They get stricter. So the rookie mistake most parents make is they start off lenient, and when that goes awry, they start putting more and more rules on, and they get stricter and stricter and stricter. So you kind of see parenting as these two lines. And as the child gets older, the rules get more and more tight on them, and that never goes well, because the design is supposed to be the other way around. The design is that your children get more and more responsibility, and as they prove that they're doing well with their responsibility, they get more and more freedom, more and more responsibility, until eventually they're out there making entirely their own decisions, providing for themselves, and you don't have to be involved. So to get that right, you actually start the other way around. You start, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Full obedience. 100% obedience. So you start off with extremely narrow parameters where you decide everything about that baby. You decide when they eat, when they sleep. You tell them when to sleep. You tell them when they can burp. They tell you when they need a burp. But you know, the point, you make them get into the routine that you want them in. And then you tell them when it's time for solid food. You tell them everything. And then as they get older, you give them a little bit more freedom. You tell them what they can and cannot touch, where they may and may not play. eventually as they get older, who they may play with and who they may not play with, their friends, everything about their life, you decide. You don't give them a choice in what they wear. If they're cold, if you're cold, they wear a jacket. That's just how that works, you know, because you know better. If you don't know better than your toddler, that's a problem. You should not have a child. Unfortunately, sometimes that ship has already sailed. And you have extremely immature parents who have children. But ideally, you want to know a little bit more than your kids. And you want to know what's best for them and what they should eat and what's healthy. You don't let them decide what to eat, because if a child decides what to eat, they will have ice cream for breakfast, for lunch, and for dinner. Maybe mixed in with some Cheetos and M&Ms and all that kind of stuff. No, those are not the food groups. You got to make them eat the veggies. Why? Not because they want to, but because you want them to. Because you know what's best for them. So that's why you start off with obedience. Then as they do well with that and respond to you, you give them more and more freedom in increments to see how they handle it. And if they go off the rails a little bit, or they go outside of the lines that you've set for them, then you tighten it up a little as a consequence until they get ready, and then you open it up. And you've got about 18 years. So there's no hurry to open it up, but if you have a responsible child, you can give them more and more responsibility. As long as they're obeying you along the way, then everything's going fine. It'll go well with them if they're honoring you in their heart as well as in their behavior. So to obey means to do exactly what someone tells you to do, all the way, right away, with the right attitude. So that's the definition of obedience for a kid. Now, there was a book called Kids Are Wet Cement. Apparently the parenting technique in the book's not very good, but the title's great. Kids Are Wet Cement. You know what cement is like? You pour it, it's wet, you can move it around, you can do anything you want with it, but it immediately starts hardening. And the longer you leave it, the harder it gets, and then eventually you can't move it around at all anymore. You need a jackhammer to do anything. It's the same with kids. They're very pliable. They're very malleable. They're moldable when they are young, but they start getting hard very quickly, so you want to make sure that you pounce on that as early as possible, because it's very difficult to now tell your 18-year-old, okay, we haven't trained you at all, but you know, in 6 months' time, you're moving out of the house, so suddenly you've got a curfew, and we're limiting your cell phone use, and we're choosing your friends for you, and we're telling you what to wear and what to eat and when to eat it. It's just not going to work. You should have been doing that when they were way younger, right? So let's look at this concept of obedience all the way. What I mean by that is obedience is only true obedience if it's total obedience. In 1 Samuel 15, you see God tell Saul to wipe out all of the Amalekites. And so he wipes out all of the Amalekites, except for one of them. He keeps King Agag. And when Samuel shows up, remember, and he said, wipe out all of the animals. And he wipes out all of the animals, except a few of them. When Samuel shows up, he says, what's this bleating that I hear in my ears? You didn't kill all the animals. And it was considered as disobedience. Now, Saul did 99% of what God told him to do. And he even says that. He's like, I did. I killed everybody except this one. What does God want me to do? Obey every single part of the command? Yeah, that's what obedience is. There's only obedience and disobedience. There's no such thing that we don't like round up on a curve here. So you have to obey all the way for it to be considered obedience. That's what it means that children must obey their parents. I've seen kids do partial obedience. You know, the parents tell them to tidy up their room, and they kind of tidy up some of it and then go back to playing. I've seen children do the exact opposite of what parents tell them to do. I mean, have you seen that in the grocery store? You know, Johnny, come stand here by mommy because I'm checking out. And then Johnny goes down the aisle. Okay, Johnny, just don't knock down the cans of tuna. Okay, no more cans of tuna. Okay, Johnny, come here. Come here. Don't make me come get you. Okay, just hold on. I'm going to go get Johnny. It's like, who's in charge here? Johnny's in charge. No. The Bible says children obey your parents, not the other way around. Why? Not because your parents are smart, but because it is right. This is the order that God has placed. Just like we said with wives submitting to their husbands, it's not because your husband is always competent. It's because it's right, meaning it's part of God's design. And you need to obey in the Lord. So the one caveat is your children don't have to obey you if you tell them to sin. And I've actually done this with my kid was really, really little. And we were at one of these, you're laughing because you remember this. We were at a mall in Northridge in California, and I was watching, it was one of these little play areas, you know, with the soft mat and they with the little slides and that. And there were all these kids playing there, and there were all these parents sitting around the side watching the kids, and there was this one little bully, and he was going around and he was bullying all the girls. He was like shoving them over and pulling their hair and pinching them and just causing trouble. And I was watching this, and the parent was watching this, and no one was doing anything about it. And the kids would one at a time come and cry to their parents, and the parents would take the girl away or send them back, and they'd get pinched again. And so I call my son over, and I say, listen, you see that little bully over there? Go get him. Just go shove him. Show him what it's like. Because that would have ended everything. Then he would be crying or whatever, and my son wouldn't get in trouble with me because he'd be obeying me. So my son kind of sheepishly walks away and then stops and comes back and says, Daddy, that's a sin, right? I was like, yes. Okay, don't go shove the kid, you know. So yeah, so that's okay when the kid says, I'm not obeying you because it's a sin. But other than that, you know, obedience in the Lord needs to be full obedience all the way. Not half obedience. If the curfew is 11 p.m., that means it's not 11:05 p.m. Okay. If you give your kid a curfew of 10 p.m. and they come home at 9:59, then next time you can give them a curfew of 10:30. And then they come back at 10:29 and you give them next time it's 11. But if you set the curfew at 9:30 and they come at 9:35, it's 8:30 next time. Nothing even starts at 8:30, so that'll teach him, right? That's the whole point. If you're good with what I give you more. Faithful with little, faithful with much. What about an appeal? Well, we worked into our parenting a system of appeal that somebody had recommended to us because sometimes you make a demand of your child that is unreasonable. And remember that the verse says, verse 4, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. That don't provoke your children to anger means don't give them a rule that they can't keep. Or, you know, like often you'll hear parents say to their kids, stop crying. You know, I've done this too. The kid's crying, you say, stop crying. Well, that's not really how crying works, right? You know, it's like, hey, stop crying. Okay. I mean, it just doesn't work that way. So they can't obey that. Now they feel like they're disobeying even more, and they are, because you're provoking them to wrath. They're getting frustrated by that. Or you tell your kid to ride their bike without the training wheels. Well, maybe they can't. Maybe they're fearful. Maybe they don't have the competence to do that yet. It's not a matter of obedience. So you only punish your child for rebellion, not for ignorance, not for incompetence, not for making childish mistakes, not for spilling the milk by accident. Now, if you tell them, don't go near that table because there's milk there and you might spill it, and they go to the table and spill it, then that's rebellion. You see the difference there? So, obedience is all the way and right away. That means immediately. Otherwise, it's not obedience. So let me ask you this. Did Jonah obey God when God told him to go to Nineveh? And the answer is yes, eventually. Eventually, he did. So, is Jonah an example of obedience? Of course not. He didn't obey right away. The fact that he eventually ended up obeying doesn't count. It only counts if you do it right away. So, the classic you hear with children is when you say, don't make me count to three. Well, the fact that your kid even knows what that means you've already failed as a parent in that regard. Ginger Hubbard has a book called Don't Make Me Count to Three that my wife and I read when we had our kids that were little, and she endorsed my book, The Home Team, as well. I reached out to her because she's just such a great writer, and it was such a great concept because I always thought you give your kid a little bit of leeway, you know, one, that's two, that's two and a half. I got really good at fractions because I was like, that's 2 3/4, that's, you know, 2 7/8, okay, it's three, now you get your spank. Well, what you're doing in that case is you're teaching your child to disobey you a few times before they have to obey. Can you imagine the Garden of Eden. Eve, put that down. Eve, don't you dare. I'm going to count to three. Eve's eating the fruit. Two, three. Okay, no fall. Everything's fine. That's not sin. You dropped it before I got to three. That's ludicrous. Don't eat the fruit. You ate the fruit. That's disobedience. You have to obey immediately for it to count as obedience. Of course, parents have to be diligent to enforce this. This is the hardest thing about parenting, is that consistency. Because it's very easy to tell your child to do something, and then when they're not doing it, now you're watching TV, or you're tired, or you're having a conversation, and you have to drop whatever you're doing and enforce some little thing that you told them not to do that they've done. It's way easier to just threaten them in the moment. If you do that, I'm going to do when you get back. That worked. Yes, as what were we saying? You know, that's not discipline. That's threatening. Do you really want your children to obey you only when you threaten them? Well, that's what you're training them to do when you say, don't do something, and then let them do it until you start yelling at them. Then they learn. Okay, I know I can do whatever I want until Dad gets to three. Or I can do whatever I want until I see that vein in Dad's forehead throbbing. That's when I need to stop, you know. Or when his voice goes up. And when he's around other people, it takes longer for him to yell, so I can actually get away with more. So what you're doing is you're training your child to sin. You are not training them to obey. Obedience is immediate and complete. Thirdly, it's also with a right attitude. God says this in Hosea 6, verse 6. It's not just the sacrifices that I desired, it's your heart. It's the mercy. It's what you believe. It's your attitude. If you're putting money in the offering plate and you're doing it for people to see and you're blowing a trumpet, it doesn't even count. If you're praying these long prayers so that people will praise you for how eloquent you are in your prayers, Jesus says, it doesn't even count. You've got your reward from men. If you want a reward from heaven, go into your closet and pray in secret. Why you do things and how you do them matters. That determines whether it's obedience or not. So if your child obeys you, but they're sulking about it, they're pouting, they're, you know, this is, sweetie, I told you to do this, you haven't done it. You need to do it. Fine. Okay. I'll take the trash out. Okay, well, at least he obeyed. No, that's not obedience at all. It's not about the trash. It's about your relationship. It's about obedience. It's about what is right in the Lord. That's the standard. And what's good about this definition of obedience is it's impossible. And that's a good thing. It's impossible for your children to be fully obedient, first time, every time, right away, with a happy heart. And that's good that that's impossible. Because then you can teach them, do you see how difficult it is to do the right thing? I know you want to. I know you want to please me, you want to do the right thing, and you're doing a shockingly bad job at it, even though you want to. You're trying, because sometimes your kids will say, but I'm trying, Dad. That's good. You're trying and you're failing miserably. Guess what? I've been there. I am there. We need Jesus to change our hearts, right? We need grace. We need the gospel. And so all of those opportunities of your children falling short, opportunities for you to teach them the gospel, bring them to Jesus, to have mercy on them as well. You always want to, you want to teach your kids about mercy. You want to teach them grace. So that's the definition of obedience. Secondly, we're going to look at the goal of obedience. The goal of obedience. In verse 4, where it says, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up. There's an imperative. That's the opposite to provoking them. So to provoke a child to anger is to, one of the ways to do that, to make your child angry by wanting them to obey, is by setting that standard that's unreasonable. You know, ride your bike when they haven't been taught how, or stop crying, or whatever it is. That kind of causes them to be frustrated and despondent. The opposite of that is to bring them up. In other words, to teach them, to raise them. So don't tell your kid to ride their bike without the training wheels. Teach them to ride the bike without the training wheels, you know. teach them what they need to do. So don't send them into a store, and when they're walking down past the tuna cans and knocking them on the floor, then they get into trouble. Well, why would a kid know that that's wrong? I mean, if the kid's 18, they should know by now, right? But if the kid's little, you need to train them before you go. So I remember this clearly when we would go to the grocery store. Kim would sit down the little kids, and she would say to them, right, this is what you may not do. Pretty much anything you feel like doing, don't do that. You know, don't knock the cans off the shelf. That was one of the things our kids like to do. Don't do that. You know, don't take any of the toys and put them in your pocket. Do not nag for anything. Don't ask for anything, okay? Or you can ask once, and if I say no, you're not allowed to ask again, or whatever it is. So you give them instruction. This is what it's going to look like. This is what obedience looks like. Then, if you do this, there will be a reward at the end. If you don't ask for the ice cream and you do everything fine, there may be an ice cream in your future, you know? If you do any of the things I just told you not to do, that is disobedience, and there will be repercussions when you come home. The way you know that your child can remember that there'll be consequence when they get home, you test that at one point. If they're very little, then you say to them one day, oh, when we get home, I'm going to give you a lollipop. And then you don't mention it again. And if when you get home, they say, oh, I remember the lollipop. Then you're like, okay, good. You can remember from the store to home. So next time I tell you not to do something, you're going to get a spanking when we get home. I know that you remember what you did wrong because you remember the lollipop. Okay, so that's just a little technique there. Because you don't want to deal with that stuff in public, right? Because then the kid has the upper hand. The more they scream, the more embarrassed you feel. And they know that. So the goal of obedience, bring them up, train them. Now, most parents don't have any idea what the goal is of raising children. I mean, what's the goal? If you're trying to get a gun in South Africa, you have to write a justification. You have to explain to the government why it is you feel you need a firearm, and you have to produce proof of that. But when you have a child, you just have one. Now you've got the child, and this is so great, and they're so cute, and they smell so good, and now what? You know, now you just let them go. Well, you don't do that with anything else in your life. You have goals with your career, you have goals with your health, you have goals with your hair, you know, you have goals for everything. Have you ever planted a garden and just said, you know, I'm just gonna put fertilizer all over the garden and then just see what grows for the next year? Let's just see how it goes. No, it'll be full of weeds. No, you decide. I want the roses over there, and I want the hydrangeas over there, and I want the grass to be kind of this length, not that length, and you have a plan. And then when a thistle pops up where your roses should be, what do? You don't say, well, let's just see how the creativity of this plant works. We don't want to squelch its self-esteem. You don't do that. You pull it immediately. Why? Because it's not part of the plan. So you need a plan for your children. You need a goal. And what is the goal? Please tell me somebody from the home team remembers. What is the goal of parenting? Anybody? Not even Kim. Ugh. No, I know. She's letting someone else answer. Anyone remember the goal of parenting? Okay, let me give you a hint. What is the goal of life? Thank you. To glorify God and enjoy Him forever. So what is the goal of football? To glorify God and enjoy Him forever. If you're not glorifying God when you're playing football, you're not doing it right. What is the goal of eating? Whether you eat or drink, do all things to the glory of God. 1 Corinthians 10:31. So, now let's try again. What is the goal of parenting? To glorify God and enjoy Him forever. So that's your goal. That's your ultimate goal. Now that sounds pretty namby-pamby at first, but think about it. That's profound. My goal with my children is to glorify God. I want to glorify God in the way that I parent them. So that's going to limit all sorts of things that I do that are sinful and inappropriate, like screaming at your kids, manipulating your kids, hurting your kids, embarrassing your kids, treating them in any kind of unloving way that you wouldn't want to be treated. All of those things are going to be off the table because my goal in parenting is for me to glorify God. But my goal in parenting is also for them to glorify God. So what you're trying to accomplish with your children is that they will be independently dependent on Christ. You don't want your children to be dependent on you for the rest of their lives. That's not healthy. You want them to be independent, not completely independent of everything. There's no such thing. You'll be a slave to sin. But to be independent of you but dependent on Christ so that they give God glory. So if you just have that little paradigm, like I want my kids to grow up glorifying God, that's going to help you decide what types of things to clamp down on. The types of things that they say, the way that they dress, the friends and the company that they keep, the entertainment that you let them watch, the way they communicate with peers, the way they communicate with their elders, the way they communicate with family members, all of these things. You're going to always filter it through what is glorifying to God in this situation. And so if you're not sure what to do, just ask your child, is this glorifying to God? And then help them see why it's not and what the correct behavior would be. That's the goal of obedience. Do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up. Raise them up. The goal of being a Christian parent is more than being an ATM to dispense money to your kids, or a chauffeur to drive them around, or a math tutor to help them with their homework, or a maid to pick up in their room, or a counselor, or a nurse, or a referee. That's not the role of the parent. The role of the parent is to train the children up so that they can glorify God. Everything else you're doing focuses on that. So bring them up. Is a command to actively raise them. You don't raise kids like you raise corn. Corn, you kind of do the thing once and then you let's see how the crop goes. With children, you got to. It's more like a bonsai tree. You got to wake up every day and see which way it's going, and you got to trim it, and you got to wire it, and you got to break this little branch off, and you got to fertilize this little thing. Maybe now it needs a bigger pot. It's like a constant thing. Proverbs 29:15 says, "The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother." You know, a lot of parents and their parenting styles these days is very much like, you know, don't limit your child, don't squelch their self-esteem, leave them to themselves. A child left to himself brings shame to his mother. You know, it's all fun and games when they're 3 years old, when they're 7 years old, but you know what happens when they're 17 years old and they got a pregnant girlfriend and an arrest for dealing drugs at school? You know what happens when you go to the jail to bail out your kid? The mom is crying. The child's mom is always crying. Why? Because he brings shame to his mother. That problem started when they were young and ended there. Unruly children show that the parents' neglect of their responsibility in bringing them up has resulted in this crop of thorns and thistles. So your job is not to control the child, but to raise them up. Not just to keep them in line, because what will happen then is they'll turn 18, they'll leave the house, and they'll go off the rails again. Not to just keep them in line when they're with you, but to aim them right as you shoot them. They're like arrows. You got to shoot them out, and you got to aim right. You don't just keep them in line when they're with you. That doesn't help. You got to put them in the right direction so that when they're on their own, they're going in the right direction, they stay in that right direction. So this is where Deuteronomy 6 comes in. This was a key verse in our class, wasn't it? Deuteronomy 6:4. "Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. And these words I command you today shall be on your heart." That's step one. You love the Lord. Step two, you shall teach them diligently to your children. So you have a relationship with the Lord and glorify God. Now you teach that to your children. How? Verse 7, you shall teach them diligently to your children and shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise. So just from that verse alone, when do you train your children in the ways of the Lord? Constantly. Always. When you wake up in the morning, that's when you rise. When you go to bed, that's when you lie down. When you walk by the way, you're walking in the mall and you see a billboard of a woman in her underwear and you say to your teenage son, "Don't look there. Let me tell you what happens. She's the woman from Proverbs 5. Her feet lead down to Sheol. She is the highway to hell. Oh, don't look on this side here. These people are trying to sell you this. They're trying to make you feel like you need those clothes to be special. But you know what? Your identity is found in Christ. That's what makes you special. Oh, look over there. Look at that donut counter. Look at the size of the people eating the donuts. Okay, what do we learn about that? Okay, well, so the whole time you're going anywhere, you're talking about things, you're teaching them constantly. There's always stuff happening. So sometimes parents think that my job is to shelter my children from all the bad things out there. Well, to a certain degree, of course. You don't want to expose your children to sin unnecessarily. But sin will come into their world, so what you want to do is prepare them for when that happens and what to do, how to deal with the temptation. And you do this all the time, as you walk with them, as you sit, as you're driving, what comes on the radio, what comes on TV. You know, Bible study is good. Catechism is good. But you need to be filling your children with a biblical worldview all the time. They have so much time at school. They have so much time in the world of entertainment. They have so much time with their friends that you can't waste time that you have with them by not teaching them Scripture. That's the time that you have them. A lot of people kind of like, well, I drop them off at Awana. I drop them off at Sunday school. I send them to a Christian school. Those are all fantastic. It's better than, you know, keeping them from those things, but it's not as good as you teaching them. It's your responsibility. So the definition of obedience we saw, first time, every time, all the way, with a happy heart. Goal of obedience, bring them up. Don't just let them do their own thing. You need to actually train them and teach them. Thirdly, the discipline of obedience. And the word here for discipline, it's the word paideia. We kind of get the word pediatrics from, or pedagogy even. Training your child, teaching your child, coaching them. It's an instruction. Teaching is instruction through reason, but training, this time training includes physical discipline. Physical discipline. We see a glimpse of this being alluded to in Hebrews chapter 12, when it speaks of how God disciplines us. Hebrews 12:6, for the Lord disciplines the one he loves and chastises every son whom he receives. It is for discipline that you have to endure, because God is treating you as sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? The writer of Hebrews is talking about God's discipline for us, but it's interesting to me that he just assumes that a good father disciplines his kids. He says, for the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those that have been trained by it. So that's one way that you know what discipline is. Discipline is something that needs to be unpleasant, but that yields fruit. So it can't be unpleasant and yield catastrophe. So one of the things you know about discipline is you should never, under any circumstances, injure your child. When people say, well, spanking is bad, that's what they're thinking of. They're thinking of people saying the word spanking, but actually beating their kids, hurting their children, injuring them, bruising them. Well, that's not going to yield the peaceful fruit of righteousness. That's not going to have a long-term good effect at all. So you never do that. Whatever you do needs to be unpleasant enough that you're teaching the lesson, but not so unpleasant that it leads to any kind of negative result in the long term. It is necessary, though. Proverbs 22:15, folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline drives it far from him. So you know what Proverbs 22:15 means? Folly is bound up in the heart of the child. It means your child is a fool. Yes, they smell good when they're little because of the baby oil and that kind of stuff. But they're not good. They're rotten. They're corrupt. They're festering little sinners. They're little reprobates. They come out that way. It's not your fault. It's kind of your fault. It's Adam and Eve's fault, and we inherited that nature from Adam and Eve. And just like a dog produces puppies and a cat produces kittens, you will produce a sinner because you're a sinner. So yes, that might be a really cute sinner, at first, but if you leave that little sinner to just fester, it'll turn into a not so cute sinner, and it'll get you in the end. So folly is bound up. They're going to make bad decisions. They're going to choose the wrong friends. They're going to do the wrong things at the wrong time. They're going to fill that milk glass up to the last brim, and they're going to put it right on the piece of paper they need, and they're just going to pull the piece of paper. Why? Because they're dumb. because they're kids. They come out that way. So you got to teach them. You want to plan ahead, sweetie. You never want to pour more than you can handle. You never want to make, you know, you got to teach them, but constantly. And when they refuse to listen to you, the rod of discipline is what drives it from them. Oh yeah, now I remember. Now I remember because every time I do something wrong, mom just nags me about it. But this one time I did something wrong, I got a spanking for it. Now I seem to remember not to do it again. It does need to be loving. Proverbs 13:24. Whoever spares the rod hates his son. You know, people think that it says in the Bible, spare the rod, spoil the child. That's not a verse in the Bible. The verse is, spare the rod, hate your child. That's what it says. I'll read it again. Proverbs 13:24. Whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline him. Some parents are like, no, I just love my kid too much to spank them. No, you're lying. The Bible says you hate your child if you don't spank them. It's what it says. Whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline him. So it's necessary, it's loving, and it keeps them safe. Proverbs 19:18. In the long run, listen to this. Discipline your son, for there is hope. Do not set your heart on putting him to death. Discipline your son, for there's hope. That's Proverbs 19:18. There's hope that if you do this in the long run, you're going to have a kid that knows what to do when they need to do it. So parents who provide a clear, enforced parameter for their children, raise children who are prepared for a relationship with God and the ability to live in society. Proverbs 23:13, do not withhold discipline from a child. If you strike him with a rod, he will not die. If you strike him with a rod, you will save his soul from Sheol. God is in the business of saving souls from hell. And he uses you as the parent, as the instrument to stop your child running headlong where their nature takes them. To Sheol, to hell. So you have some practical tips. You always want to check your motives. You don't want to be spanking in anger. You don't want to be spanking because you're embarrassed by something that the child said or the child's done. That's not why you're training them, because of your embarrassment. You check your motives. Sometimes it's good to tag team with the other parent. I'm the angry one, so you administer the discipline. Secondly, never add embarrassment to the punishment. So you don't want to spank your daughter in front of her friends, because that's cruel and unusual punishment. Like, that is mortifying. And that's not the punishment. If the punishment is a spanking, it needs to be, you're going to get one spanking for this or two spankings for that. It's going to be over afterwards. We're going to pray together. It's going to be done. Well, I'm not going to do this in front of your friends. I'm not going to do it out in public. I'm not going to add embarrassment to the situation. We've already said never injure your child. Thirdly, be consistent. Your child needs to know that when you say something's going to happen, it is going to happen. And if you can get that drummed into their brains at a young age, that is going to save you hours and hours and hours of discipline later on. The mere fact that if your parent says something, you know that they'll do it. I learned this at a very young age, and there's a photograph of me learning it. It's very little. I was sitting in a high chair. And my mom said, if you don't open your mouth for this custard, I'm going to put it in your ear. And I said, hum. Boom. And somebody took a photograph of it, you know, back in 1979 or whatever it was. And I still got that photograph of me going, oh, like the shock on my face. Like, I can't believe she did that. But I learned, and I was shown that photograph many times over the years. When we say we're going to do something, we're going to do it. The fourth thing we're looking at tonight is instruction of obedience. We have 1 minute left, so you're lucky. Definition of obedience, goal of obedience, discipline of obedience, and instruction of obedience is to train them up. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, verse 4 says, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. That word instruction, nuthesia, we get the word nuthetic counseling. Like biblical counseling. So nuthesia is to admonish, to tell them what they're doing wrong. Proverbs 29:15 said, the rod and reproof give wisdom. You can't just use the rod. A child getting spanked and they don't know what they're getting spanked for doesn't help anything. They're not learning anything. You have to give them the instruction as well. This is what you did wrong. This is what you need to do next time. Do you understand that what you did wrong? Do you agree that you did it wrong? Are you going to do it again? No. Okay, good. Then you have learned your lesson. And sometimes we would teach our kids to. Sometimes we would just say, okay, well, you've understood the lesson. I believe you. I'm going to give you mercy. Because I want them to understand mercy too. Because we get mercy from God all the time. So, mercy. You're not going to get a spank, even though you deserve one. Because you admitted it and you responded this well. Now, if you do it again, that means you didn't learn. And then you're not going to get mercy. But for now, it's for mercy. Just a little footnote on that. That can backfire. Because I've been in a grocery store before with one of my little kids. And I said to them, you're going to get spanked for that when we get home. And they started saying, mercy, daddy, mercy, mercy, in front of everyone. And I was like, just sounds kind of strange, but yeah. So all of this, what it does is it should encourage you, if you're going to use the scriptures to counsel your children and to instruct your children, you need to know the scriptures. It always boils down to know your Bible better and everything will go well if you're applying it, right? Somebody once said, how to teach a parrot to talk. Step one in teaching a parrot to talk, have a larger vocabulary than the parrot. It's the same when you're teaching your child to obey the Bible. You need to know the Bible better than them. So go learn your Bible so that you can teach it to them during the day. And that's all I have for you except for this. If you're sitting here thinking, I wish I had heard this 30 years ago. It's a very, very common response. God is sovereign over these things. It is never, ever too late to ask your children's forgiveness. If you've got little kids and you haven't been raising them right, go sit them down, ask their forgiveness, and tell them from now on, Mommy and Daddy are going to do things the biblical way. And they might not understand that that's a good thing, but they will in the long run. And even if your children are grown, it's not inappropriate for you maybe to call them up and say, you know what, this is where I fell short as a parent. I just want you to know I'm aware of that. Please forgive me. That can speak volumes to a child, the fact that a parent's willing to ask forgiveness. And that's a crash course in parenting. Are there any questions? Anyone want to send their kids back after this? Too late. Can't happen. Any questions? Do you have any questions? Yes. Bonnie. Do you? Yeah, so that, okay, good question. So in verse 3, when it says, you honor your mother and father that it may go well with you and live long on the earth. So that's a reference to in the Ten Commandments, the promise that's made there in Exodus chapter 20, which we looked at when we were going through that in our evening series. But so he's quoting the whole verse, and there's a sense there. So that verse is written to Israel specifically, that the descendants of the Israelites would be living in the land. As long as they are keeping covenant and they are obeying what they're taught, God is going to bless them. And part of the blessing is that they get to live in the promised land. Okay, so that's the original context of that verse. What Paul's doing there is he's applying it more generally to the children of the Ephesians. So these are Gentile and Jewish believers who have children, people like us that have kids. And it applies to us in this way, that if the children are obeying the parents and honoring the parents in the Lord, it's more about their relationship with the Lord. And if you have a right relationship with the Lord, and one of the ways that you manifest that is by obeying your parents and honoring them, then it will go well with you in the long run. And I think that the parallel there of living long in the land is maybe referring to the concept of salvation, that you will be right with God on into eternity if you do these things. If you have godly parents and they're teaching you the gospel and you're responding to the gospel because you're obeying them in the Lord for this is right, then you're going to get to live forever with the Lord. That's one interpretation. Another interpretation of the verse could just be that, even in this life, things go, in general, go better for children that are obedient to their parents than children that are not. I'm not sure which way I lean on that. They're both true. Because it is true that if your parents are good parents and they're giving you good rules and you're keeping those rules, that doesn't mean you can't die at a young age, because there's always accidents in that. But it does mean that you will be living in such a wise way that many of the risks that come from foolish living is not part of your life. Things like driving with people who are drunk, STDs, drug use, getting into trouble with the cops. Often you find teenagers who are getting into trouble with the cops are in an environment where they haven't been taught to avoid that. So if they had good parents teaching them and they were obeying their parents, they would be in a safer scenario. Again, it's not an absolute statement, but I do think that that's general wisdom. Good question. Anything else? I cut that last point short and we have 10 minutes, so if you don't ask me something, I'm just going to carry on. Okay, let me mention this. Let me throw a scenario at you. You hear children fighting in the room upstairs. You come up the stairs. They're fighting over a toy. And they say, "This is my toy." "Yes, but I asked if I could share it, and you said yes." "Yes, but I had it first. You snatched it from me." "No, but you said this. No, but you said that, and you're the parent. Now you're the referee. What do you do?" What? Take away the toy is the first instinct of every parent. Okay, you want the toy. You want the toy. We can't decide whose right it is to have the toy right now. I'm just going to remove the toy, and that will solve the problem. How many parents have done that? Definitely me. When has that worked? No hands. Okay, yeah, that doesn't work. So what happens is your instinct is to take away the toy and remove the problem, but that's not what we just learned. What is the goal of parenting? To have peace in the home and not have any conflict. No. What's the goal of parenting? To glorify God and enjoy Him forever. So this is a golden opportunity to teach some sort of principle that's going to glorify God. Now you might decide to latch onto the sharing aspect of that. You might latch onto the fact that if you say something, you can't, you know, you need to be have integrity with your word. And if you said He could play with it, then He can play with it, etc. Another thing is, the line my wife uses most often in this parenting situation, do you want to say it? When there's any kind of conflict, your relationship, well, she'll ask, which is more important, your relationship with each other or playing with that toy? Oh, it's just such a convicting question. Because they know the right answer, but they don't feel it right then. They're wondering, like, playing with a toy, of course, is more important. I don't care about my relationship, but they know the right answer, and they know. And we told them, you know, in the long run, you and your siblings, you're going to be in each other's lives for decades. And there's going to be a time where you're going to need each other's help. And one of you might need to support the other one financially for a time. And one of you might need to babysit the other one's kids so that the other one can go on an anniversary trip. And you just go into this big picture. Like, God has put you together to work together as a team for His glory. And it starts with little decisions here. So it's not about the toy. It's about your heart towards your sibling. So you always want to, whatever the scenario is, you always want to bring it back to, what's the heart issue here? The kid's walking down the aisle and they knock down the can of tuna after you told them not to. It's not about the tuna. The tuna's dead anyway. It doesn't matter about the tuna. There's an issue. There's a relationship issue going. I gave you an instruction, you disobeyed it. Explain to me why. Did you forget? Because the spank will help you remember next time. Were you defiant and you were trying to make a point? You're upset about something else, so you're just trying to lash out in this way? Let's talk about our relationship and let's talk about your relationship with the Lord using the can of tuna as a launching point. And you might think that the things that you're struggling with, the stolen lollipop, the bumped over can of tuna, the pulling your sister's hair, the taking the toy, that these are too little to get into like a whole gospel presentation situation. But the more you do it with the little things, the more you pick the little weeds as they pop up, the less you have to do later on when they turn into giant weeds, right? If you let it grow, it just grows and grows into a forest, and then it's too late. Good. Any other questions? Yes, Dave. Yeah, that's a really good question. So he's referring to the verse in Proverbs that says, if you train up a child in the way he should go, he will not depart from it. Now remember that in, and then the follow-up question is, well, what about children that you did train up in the way of the Lord and they did depart from it. So remember that when you're talking about proverbial wisdom, the wisdom of Proverbs, they're general statements. There's general statements there like, you know, if you work hard, the soul of the diligent is satisfied with wealth, you know. Like, well, there are people who work very hard who'd never get wealthy because of their job or whatever it is. So it's a general principle that if you are following these guidelines, you are stacking the odds in your favor for that. So no, I would not say necessarily that a parent has failed if their children have wandered from the Lord, did not go in the way that they were taught, because you aren't responsible. Well, that's the wrong word. You can't save your child. So let's start with that. God is sovereign over salvation. And if a person is not saved, if they don't belong to the Lord, then there's only so much you can do, and it's while they're at home. And when they go off on their own, you know, they're going to follow their own way. If you've done what you can do, that's all you can do, and then pray for them for that. So it's not always a case. Sometimes it is the parents have failed, because what often happens with parents is they think, oh, I'm doing enough by just being in a Christianized environment. But the kids learn that the parents are hypocrites and that the parents don't apply what's happening. That they go to the same sermon, they hear the parents hear the same sermon, and then the parents do the opposite on the way out of church. And what you're teaching your kid, you're slitting the throat of the sermon they just heard, and you're teaching the kid that you don't actually believe anything from the Bible, so why should they? Sometimes it is the parents' fault, because they're not doing the first part. They're not training up their kid in the way they should go. In fact, they are training the kid that the way they should go is away from church as soon as they can. But another thing that happens is parents do everything right. You see cases where you get godly parents who have multiple children, and you know, four of the five kids end up being pastors and missionaries, and you have faithful Christians, and then one kid goes off the rails completely. So it's not like they just forgot to parent that kid. It's because God is sovereign of those types of things. There's always hope for that. Another thing that often happens is people get saved in later life. Think of how many of you maybe even got saved in later life, and what your Christian parents thought of that. So don't stop praying for your children, and maybe even after you've gone, your testimony lingering there causes them to be saved and you can be reunited in heaven as well. Good question, though. Anything else? Yes, Charlie. Yeah, so you're looking after your aging parents, and they shouldn't be driving, but that's their independence, but maybe they're blind, so maybe it's not a good idea for them to drive. How do you approach that with them? So then again, now it's an interesting thing, because the verses about parenting are always parenting your children. They're never about parenting your parents. But there is an aspect, isn't there, where there's sometimes a bit of a role reversal later in life, because we, as we get older, we become more dependent on our children. In certain cases. And so if they become a dependent of yours, they're living at home with you and you're looking after them, then I do think it's a very, very tricky thing, because you are told to always honor your parents. And so you need to honor them. You can't say, well, you're under my roof now, I'm just going to take those keys away. But hopefully you've cultivated a relationship with them over time where the very lessons that they've taught you and the way that they apply that to you, you can now apply to them. And they might not appreciate it as much right now, but I mean, I know that's a difficult thing. My parents live on a different continent, so I haven't had to deal with that myself, and they're not that old. But I mean, if anyone has wisdom for Charlie, maybe speak to him afterwards. What I would say to you, Charlie, is remember this when Drew comes to you someday and says, "Dad," that's why I'm. That's funny. Good. Well, that's taken us to our time. If you have more questions, I'll be up front. Thank you very much.